So we're going to talk about getting along today, getting along with people, getting along with God, and believe we got everything working. The interesting thing is, you know, some people are so easy to get along with. I don't know if you noticed that. Some people are just super easy to get along with. This is a picture of John Wilkie, who's not here today, but he is very easy to get along with. I took him and Dave along with me one time to the Chicago Auto Show, which I like to go to because my daughter lives about 45 minutes from the McCormick Center. And we were looking at these different cars. John, you know, is being himself. He was on pain pills that day because of his knee, so we had a little extra fun with him. But, you know, he got in this car. This is a Smart for Two car is what it was called. And it's a good thing it has a sunroof because big guys wouldn't fit in it very well. But there's John getting ready to drive away in that thing. And it was just a good memory, Dave. I don't know if you remember that we went to Portello's afterwards. And John, because of his whatever he was taking, he said his stomach was a little off. So he ordered a strawberry milkshake. Well, then my daughter met us there and she said, well, they have a chocolate cake shake too. So John had to order one of those too, and he got it, started drinking. He says, I'm not sharing this. And that was just kind of fun. And it was just a good time. And I remember Becky telling me it took you a week before you were back to normal after that show. So it made you a little stiff, but it was fun to do all that walking. So that was a good thing. And, you know, there's other folks that you just can't hang out with no matter what. You know, some of us have ex-spouses, and that's very difficult. I have not spoken a word to my ex-spouse in over 20 years, and I don't think that's going to change because it just doesn't work to have conversations with such a person. And, you know, there's been other things, too. There's folks that I just don't engage in conversation with. Several years ago, I was working on my doctorate, and I wrote some papers that questioned Reformed orthodoxy. And some folks in the classes, the district, got hold of those papers, started circulating them. And the classes started an investigation. It's really an interesting thing. Ron Geschwint was the pastor of First Reformed of Grand Haven at the time. He was chair of that committee, which I'm now on. And he was asking me all the questions and got halfway through the questioning time and realized Ron was trying to help me. I had assumed that everybody on that committee was going to be an antagonist, but here was Ron trying to help me out. And obviously I was not demitted. And those who tried to demit me, the ones that are still living, are now my friends, which is kind of an interesting thing. Just an interesting aside on that. Jan Rehm and Jim Hooksema were elders at that time. And one of the hearings they had was up in our parlor right here at Laketon Bethel. And there was a pastor who was a small person. And those of you who know Jan and Jim, they're pretty big guys. And it was kind of funny because afterwards, Jan was on one side and Jim was on the other. And they were both yelling at this poor little pastor at the same time. He called me the next day and he said, I had 750 pounds of ticked off elder yelling at me all at once. But that was an interesting time. It worked out. It's a good thing. Now I'm friends with all those people, but it doesn't always work that way. So I asked the question, who do you want to hang out with? And some of us have all kinds of different answers. Some people say, just my dog is fine. You know, that's enough, and of course I understand that. Some have been burned by relationships and choose to be loners. And some don't know how to talk to others and build relationships. Some want relationships, don't know how to get them. So he asked the question, who do you want to hang with? You know, here's what I've observed is how you get along with God and how you get along with people are very connected. Now, the biggest problem in the church of Corinth, if you look at, we're in 2 Corinthians, David, if you look at 1 Corinthians, the first chapter was all about people fighting. They didn't get along. They fought over leadership. They fought over the rules. You know, the pagans came in and said, well, you don't have to follow all these Jewish rules. Well, some of the Jewish people thought that was too much freedom, but they became libertine. And one of the Jewish guys had a very public affair with his stepmother, and that really ticked Paul off. Every Sunday night they had potluck suppers because half of them were slaves, so they couldn't get off of work. So Sunday night after sunset, they'd get together. That was the forerunner of our communion service. They'd get together, they'd share a meal, and at the end of the meal, they'd remember what Jesus did for them. Well, some folks would come there and bring in all kinds of luxury foods and not want to share them with the people that were poorer than them. Others would come in there and get drunk. They weren't even reformed. But they would come in and do that, and it was a horrible time for them. Paul had this dilemma, and then they fought over Paul's credentials. Is he really fit to lead us? So he had a tough time. I can just see what he was thinking. He's saying, come on, people. Grow up. Come on, kids. Get along with each other. When I used to fight with my cousins at my grandmother's house, English was her second language. Dutch was her first language. It'd be good for you all to learn Dutch because you'll be speaking it soon enough in heaven anyway. But the thing is, she had a phrase for us. I didn't realize what it meant until much later. But she would call us for failing to azel. Y'all need to learn that word because you can say it in church because nobody understands it. For failing to azel. Fafalit means annoying, and azel means donkey. So use your imagination on what that means. Fafalit to azel. I was called that already when I was 7 years old. Now, it's just kind of an interesting thing. But, I don't want to be an annoying donkey. And I imagine if Paul had known Dutch, he would have called the people in Corinth that. There's nothing worth fighting over. So get along with each other. Be friends with each other because God is already friends with you. I'm sure that Paul taught them what Jesus said in Matthew 7:12, to treat others the way you want to be treated. I'm sure Paul taught them what Jesus said in John 13. So now I'm giving you a new commandment. Love each other just as I have loved you, so you should love each other. Your love for one another will prove to the world that you are my disciples. So here's how Paul explained this to Corinth, and this is from 2 Corinthians. Our firm decision is to work from this focus center. One man died for everyone. That puts everyone in the same boat. He included everyone in his death so that everyone could be included in his life. The resurrection life, a far better life than people ever lived on their own. See, Paul is the one that came up with the idea that everybody's equal at the foot of the cross. That Jesus died for everyone so that you could have a better life. Jesus died to set you free. Free of the trivial, vain spats that people engage in. Free from the middle school popularity contests that sometimes people don't get over as adults. Free from wondering who will like you and who won't. Free to have reason rule over your emotions. Free to have faith rule over your fear. See, sometimes we do kind of silly things, He says this, as a result of this choice, we assess individuals based on their character rather than their appearance or possessions. I had a car almost exactly like that one, 69 Chevelle. And I thought it was a really cool car. I put the custom wheels on it. I grew my hair out long and wore all the cool clothes. And thought it was something else. I even put hijackers on. You remember hijackers? Those air shocks that you could make the back end go up of your car to look really cool. Well, then I ran into some kids who called themselves Jesus people. And I became much more interested in being a Jesus freak myself. And so I put the stock wheels back on the car, and took the SS off the side, and started to not care about appearances anymore. And it's taken me a half a century to get back to that. And every once in a while, I do feel the temptation to put hijackers on my Camry, but not very often. Maybe I should put it on my minivan. You know, I because of Jesus, because of my faith at that time, I went back. I quit wearing the disco clothes and got into the hippie farmer clothes again, and that's where I'm comfortable. I had to stop judging people based on how cool they looked, because that's meaningless. And Paul says, we looked at the Messiah that way once, and we got it all wrong, as you know. We certainly don't look at him that way anymore. And originally, they thought Jesus was a loser. I mean, he wasn't wealthy, didn't have a penthouse on Wall Street, let himself get killed by a blend of religious conservatives and government. I'm sure they were running around saying, what a loser. He's not cool. They don't look at him that way anymore. He says this, now we look inside. And what we see is that anyone united with the Messiah gets a fresh start, is created new. The old life is gone, and a new life emerges. You got this new life because you're forgiven. And when that happens, your values change completely. So much so that those who don't know Jesus can't even understand what motivates you. That's a cool place to be. And he says, look at it. All this comes from God, who settled the relationship between us and him and then called us to settle our relationships with each other. So God settled his relationship with us. He ransomed us, and that's sometimes really hard for folks to understand. But we were born in captivity. We are the descendants of slaves to Satan. We are descendants of the ones who partook in seeking life from the devil. Now, I have an African-American brother-in-law. He lives in St. Louis. He grew up in that nasty part of St. Louis. He's been there his whole life. He tells the story of, you know, his great-grandfather. Now, it's fun looking at those pictures that Joanne found of Kathy's grandparents, Joel's grandparents, a few of you that were founding members of this church. Well, my brother-in-law, Art, his great-grandfather was in the last batch of slaves to be auctioned off at the St. Louis County Courthouse. And when he talks about that, it is just really interesting. See, if things hadn't changed, he would have been born in slavery too, and somebody would have had to ransom him out. The Jews knew all about slavery. It was part of their history. They were enslaved as a nation twice, once in Egypt and once in Babylon. God ransomed them out, and he forgave them, just like he forgives us and ransoms us from the powers of sin and death. And he forgives us and develops a relationship with us, and then he calls us to settle relationships with each other. God put the world square with himself through the Messiah, giving the world a fresh start by offering forgiveness of sins. God has given us the task of telling everyone what he is doing. We are Christ's representatives. See, we're forgiven. That means we no longer have to be a fafail and a azel. We no longer have to be a jerk. We've been given a fresh start, and we're given it over and over again. And now we get to tell others about this grace, because we're the representatives of Jesus. And Paul says this. He says, God uses us to persuade men and women to drop their differences and enter into God's work of making things right between them. We're speaking for Christ himself now. Becomes friends with God, he's already a friend with you. The older translations call this the ministry of reconciliation, where you drop the differences between each other and choose to get along. I wonder what Paul would say about this little party they're having in D.C. tomorrow. You know, if I look at Lakeland Bethel, half of you are unhappy about what's happening, and half of you are happy about it. How do we get along with each other? How do we put aside our differences? You know, this inauguration is causing a lot of division. I can't even talk about it with my brother because it's way too much effort to convince him how wrong he is. But the thing is, it's caused a lot of division. We need to become friends with each other, become friends with God in the process, because he's already friends with you. He has said yes to you. Now it's up to you to say yes to him. See, Paul wanted everyone in that Corinthian church to get along, but I'll bet they didn't. Sometimes you just can't. But there were really good people in Corinth who took the teachings of Jesus seriously. And we know that for a fact. They fed widows. And, you know, the Romans didn't have a welfare system that took care of little children. So if a kid was orphaned, he just starved to death. Or if it was a girl, she went into prostitution. That was the only options they had. Well, these early Christians adopted these kids. And that evidence of the love of Christ brought a huge, rapid spread of Christianity in that area. But you know, whenever there's a good thing happening, the devil sends his people in. He's got sleepers in every church. And then they'll fight for the alpha position. You know, me big, you little, that sort of thing. And Christians are too nice. Sometimes we let that happen. Don't let that happen. Here's some takeaways from this passage that I'd like you to remember. One is that we're all equal at the foot of the cross. We're forgiven and free to start over every day. Because it's just like addicts, we have a chance to start over every day. Like narcissists, we realize we don't have to be fulfilling to Azels anymore. We don't have to be like that. We're set free. We're called to represent Christ in a ministry of reconciliation. As my grandmother said, the same one that called me an annoying donkey, she said, if you can't be nice, at least be quiet. No aggressive behavior, no retaliation, and accept God's offer of friendship. There's going to be some folks you can't get along with no matter how hard you try. You know, ex-spouses are on the top of that list. What I've had to do is just drop the aggressive retaliation and just be quiet. If you can't be nice, be quiet. And that applies to how we talk about the inauguration tomorrow. It applies right in the face of that. So let's try to get along with each other, even if we're on different sides of the fence. Most folks we can get along with, especially if our agenda is the agenda of Jesus. Just ask, how can I help? It'll go a long way. It goes a long way with God too. You know, in your prayers, instead of presenting God with a wish list, just say, how can I help? Or in light of this passage, say, how can I help, my friend? And he'll show you. Let's pray together. Lord, how can we help? We realize that you've blessed us, you've given us a mission. How can we help? Fill our hearts and minds with that vision. Amen.